Northwestern Wisconsin is home to a globally rare and unusual ecosystem. There's a good chance that you've never seen it in person before. In fact, according to our next guest, some people say you have to be lost to find it. Wisconsin's Pine Barrens are home to a unique habitat. It's a place with a long human and natural history. Our next guest is the author of a new book about the history and ecology of one of Wisconsin's most unique wildlife areas. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you visited the Pine Barrens here in Wisconsin? Have you heard about them? Have you had any interesting wildlife sightings if you've been there? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. Dave Peters is a retired journalist, including, by the way, with Minnesota Public Radio. His new book is Sand and Fire, Exploring a Rare Pine Barrens Landscape. Dave, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you. Good to be with you, Rob.
Can you give us a quick description of the Pine Barrens? Set the scene. Paint us a picture.
It's a captivating place. I stumbled upon it some years ago, driving around in what I thought was the North Woods. And all of a sudden, the land opened up, the trees disappeared, and I was in this open, not quite a prairie. There are trees, lots of low trees, jack pines and scrub oak, a lot of brush like blueberries and sweet fern and flowers. It just is an open, a lot of people refer to it as a brush prairie. Not really a prairie there because there are more trees than that, but you can see the horizon. And it just really delivers a sense of space in what you thought was the North Woods.
And what's interesting is you and people who research these kind of things describe it as a mosaic of some different things that kind of shift and grow into each other and change over time.
That's right. People like the term a shifting mosaic, because one of the key elements of a barrens is that it burns regularly. So after a burn, the oaks will be killed back and the jack pines affected. And after a few years, they start to grow back. The brush comes up. I know people who say they wait 2 years after a burn and then they go in and go blueberry picking. So mm-hmm. The blueberries come on and sweet fern comes up, and then aspen grows up and it gets big enough. And after a few more years, it'll burn again and shift back.
You tell the natural story and the human story of the Pine Barrens here in Wisconsin. Let's go way back. The key here is that there's sand. There's lots of sand and it goes down deep. Why did the sand end up there?
It's glacial outwash sand that poured out of the glaciers from to the north, Lake Superior. And they deposited just an unfathomable amount of sand. It's hundreds of feet thick. There's this band of Northwest sands that runs from about Bayfield down to St. Croix Falls, about 150 miles, maybe 20 miles wide. It's very thick, and it's mostly pretty flat. It's like if you've ever been to Alaska or Iceland, I guess. These braided rivers come pouring out of the glaciers and laying down all this sand. And that's pretty much all there is there is sand. And so that the sand, it drains quickly, as you might expect. And so the land is very dry. And that's what makes it so prone to fires as well.
Now, I think barrens and I think sand, and I guess I'm picturing, Dave, a desert, but you have photographic evidence it is not a desert. Can you talk about the variety of life in this environment?
Yeah, it definitely is not barren in that sense. Like I say, some people refer to it as a brush prairie because there's lots of brush, prairie willows, blueberries, as I mentioned, sweet ferns, New Jersey tea. At one point in the Namekagon Barrens or at one place in the Namekagon Barrens, there's a bog, so that you have pitcher plants down in a wet environment. The whole thing is kind of it's habitat for the key species that people really want to preserve is the sharp-tailed grouse. So it's good terrain for sharp-tailed grouse. They have cover that they can hide in and feed in, eat the berries. There's a lot of flowers. There are barrens elsewhere, like out east, New England, New Jersey, New York. And they tend to be, first of all, the trees are different. They're pitch pines, not jack pines. And they tend not to have the as many flowers and grasses as our barrens do here. It's a little more of a prairie look in Wisconsin.
We're talking to Dave Peters, author of the new book, Sand and Fire, Exploring a Rare Pine Barrens Landscape, that landscape in northwestern Wisconsin. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Now, I haven't been there. Maybe you have, and you could share your experience, maybe picking berries or seeing the scenery. Maybe you have a family connection to that region. Join in with your experiences or questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Dave Peters is with us. His new book is Sand and Fire, Exploring a Rare Pine Barrens Landscape. He tells the story of a unique ecosystem in northwestern Wisconsin. You could join in at 800-642-1234. If you have seen this in person or have questions about it, that's 800-642-1234. Dave, I want to start digging into the human history now. How far back do we know for sure that there were people maybe gathering blueberries or hunting or you name it in the Pine Barrens?
It goes way back. There have been people on this land for thousands of years. There are a couple of archaeological sites nearby, near the Barrens, at Solon Springs and Gordon, that have artifacts that archaeologists date to late Paleo-Indian, which puts it about 10,000 years ago, evidence that they were hunting in that area. When I started writing the book, I really wanted to be able to say the first people there were hunting mammoths. That turned out not to be true. It was true in southern Wisconsin, but not up there. The ice was still there when the mammoths went extinct. So they were hunting caribou and other large animals. And of course, over thousands of years, cultures change, people travel, people migrate. It became for a long time was Dakota country. And then Ojibwe people moved in from the east in the 1600s, 1700s in this area, and obviously are still there today in many numbers, great numbers.
Let's bring on a caller. Austin is with us in Lafarge. Austin, hi.
Hi there. I've been through the Mucwa Barrens many times, had the opportunity to study there while I attended Northland College. Hunted there, been lost there. Since having moved to southwest Wisconsin, we drive through the kind of central sand barrens, or at least that's kind of what I call them, kind of north of Baraboo. And just curious how those are similar or different to the Mucwa Barrens area of the Schwamigan-Nicolet.
Austin, thanks for the call. Yeah, we've got the Central Sands region of Wisconsin and more where Austin is now. Dave, do you have any compare and contrast thoughts?
Yeah, there's kind of a sand necklace from northwestern Wisconsin down through central Wisconsin and then back up to northeastern Wisconsin. And it's similar terrain, the sand, outwash sand, I think, for the most part. The northwest sands are the region that are probably most like they once were before America Europeans came in, because there's more public, a lot of public land, state and federal land. You mentioned the Mucwa Barrens, which is way up on the northern end of the Northwest Sand. That's managed by the federal government. The Namekagon Barrens are managed by the state the state DNR. So there's more open terrain that people would refer to as true barrens landscape.
Thanks a lot for the call, Austin. Dave, with European settlement, a lot of economic attempts to use the region, mostly lumber. But one thing that fascinated me in your book is a short period where people thought, hey, this might be great for agriculture. And you actually dig into kind of the life story of a number of settlers from Europe or elsewhere in the United States. It turned out this is a really bad place to try to be a farmer, right?
Yeah, it wasn't a good idea in the long run, but people thought it was. When logging peaked in this area in about the 1890s, the legislature commissioned the Dean of Agriculture in Madison, the University of Wisconsin, to go look at northern Wisconsin and figure out what people could do, how people could farm it. And he wrote a handbook for farming, that praised the area and promised that there would be prodigious crops of hay, potatoes, there'd be truck gardens like New Jersey. And there was a big push to bring people in. There was an immigration state immigration commission. There were county immigration commissions that encouraged people to come from around the Midwest and from Europe. And people came. They came. They homesteaded. They bought land from the railroad. They bought land from the government. And in this little area, the Namekagon Barrens, which now is about 6,800 acres, there were 100 or 200 people living there for, well, the peak was maybe around 1910 or so, and they were had their cows, had their crops, they were trying, not too many lasted too long. They had a little community. There was a general store, a post office, a little schoolhouse that the kids went to school. But it pretty quickly kind of petered out by the 20s and into the 30s, and everybody was gone.
Dave, can you bring us into the modern day and conservation efforts? This is a landscape that is managed in part to change past changes with logging and things like that. What is the state of conservation in our Pine Barrens?
Well, when the farmers left, most of the land reverted to the county. The people just didn't pay their taxes, and the land went back to the county. And the first instinct was to grow trees on it, make some money, get some revenue for counties that were that needed it. And so that was kind of the beginning effort in the 30s. But by the late 30s, the 40s, and into the 50s, people were aware that sharp-tailed grouse habitat in Wisconsin was fading, was vanishing, and people focused in this area, the Namekagon Barrens especially, in an effort to preserve some of that land, some of that habitat, and not to grow trees on it. So in the 50s, after a lot of debate, Burnett County and the state came to an agreement where the state would manage this land, not for timber, but for habitat, sharp-tailed grouse habitat. And the focus was on this bird, this one species. Today, people talk about, the birds are there and they try to keep them going, but people talk more about an ecosystem that's preserved. And so you have county timberland all around the barrens, but the barrens itself is open and managed for habitat.
As we wrap up, Dave, clearly you've fallen in love with this landscape. What are your favorite things when you go to one of your favorite spots, like by the remains of an old schoolhouse, to look for this time of year in autumn?
The flowers are, there's still some flowers out, the asters and maybe even a few pecans, goldenrod and sunflowers might still be out. I just like to go walk around. There's no trails in the Barrens, but you don't need them. It's so open. So I just like to go walk around, and you stumble across an old depression of a farmhouse or a foundation. You can find a few fruit trees that people planted 100 years ago. I find it just a rewarding thing, a thing to do. Lots of people canoe past in the Namekagon River, but not many come to the Barrens.
Dave, thanks so much for sharing the Barrens with us today.
Thank you.
That's Dave Peters, retired journalist, author of the new book, Sand and Fire, exploring a rare Pine Barrens landscape, a unique landscape here in northwestern Wisconsin.